When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with the New World Report. Welcoming Professor Evan Ellis, the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. We're going to Mexico with an odd story to my mind. The outgoing, very popular president of Mexico, known affectionately as AMLO, very popular figure throughout his time in office because of his ability to tell a story in the morning on television, like Captain Kangaroo, although in this instance he's dealing with a modern culture and a very sophisticated enterprise, prosperity everywhere except also crime all along the American border. However, right now, AMLO is not concerned with along the American border. He's concerned with the U.S. Embassy and the Canadian Embassy. It's a surprising story, and I asked the professor to help me understand it. The Mexican government has paused its relationship with the U.S. and Canadian embassies, writes Reuters. President Andre Manuel Lopez Obrador said after their ambassadors criticized a proposed judicial reform that he, the president, backs. There is a pause, said AMLO in a press conference, clarifying that the freeze was with the embassies and not with the countries. Professor, that's a fine distinction. However, I note that the embassies are doing the bidding of their governments, and what they're saying is that they have severe doubts about reforms that AMLO wants to see in place before he leaves office on October 1st, severe doubts that those are pro-democracy. They more look like, well, autocracy is too strong a word. Let's just say party bossism. What is it that the embassies are objecting to? What is it that AMLO wants to achieve? Thank you.
Thank you, John. Well, a little bit of context, as you alluded to, AMLO, not entirely unlike Hugo Chavez in Venezuela and others we've seen across the region, came to power in part through the frustration of the people in Mexico with the performance of their other political parties and institutions. AMLO, as you also pointed out, with his mañaneras, his morning programs has been very effective in communicating and connecting at that personal level with the Mexican people. And over the years, his party, the Morena Party, has basically done the same thing, ironically, that Mexico's previous dictatorial party, the revolutionary PRI, did, which is capture all of the institutions of the Mexican governorships and influence across institutions. Now, one of the things that AMLO didn't have, even though his Morena party had significant control over Congress before, is he did not have a two-thirds majority. And so during his sexenio, which is coming to an end, some of the things that he wanted to try to do with public infrastructure projects, he was limited by the Mexican courts. Some of the other things that he wanted to do, he was limited by the judicial oversight organization. And so he now has, as he departs power, a unique opportunity to change things and leave a legacy of unprecedented power to his predecessor, Mexico's first woman president, Claudia Sheinbaum. Claudia Sheinbaum takes office at the beginning of October. However, by the way that Mexico's political system works, the new Congress that is elected will take power at the very beginning of September. This is important because there's that period for a month from September to October where AMLO remains the president, but the Congress, in which he finally got a two-thirds majority, far more than a two-thirds majority in the lower house, about 364 seats. He only needs 334 to have a majority there. And just shy of a majority in the Senate, 83 out of 128 seats. Although, if you add parties that are allied with the Morena Party, you get well over the two thirds. And so he now has two thirds in the House and Senate. He now has this year, this month, to put through some of the judicial reforms. And so some of the things that he is looks like he is going to do, that he's put on the agenda in this month session, is number one, change the rules for electing Supreme Court justices. Before, it was an appointed system, not unlike the United States, which gave the same type of independence for judges. But by going to an elected system, you essentially move towards a Venezuela-style system where the party that is dominant, the mood that is dominant, that allows you, even in areas where you have narco-dominated places, you can get judges who are tied to that because of they're tied to elections. With many, including the U.S. Ambassador Ken Salazar and as well as the Canadian Ambassador Granville Clark, there is profound concern that having essentially judges that, as we've seen in Venezuela, where the Supreme Court just validated a completely fraudulent election because they were tied to Maduro. The concern is that if you have essentially judges and a Supreme Court that is tied to the political leadership of a dominant party, the party can do whatever they want. They can invalidate contracts. They can push through energy legislation that AMLO has tried to do. They can change contracts that govern the operation of Western firms there. And so it's ironic that, for example, Ken Salazar, who is a very effective ambassador, but he's also been an ambassador that has been very, very sympathetic to AMLO's cause. As a matter of fact, among those on the right in the United States, there's often grumbling that Ken Salazar is not actually the U.S. ambassador to Mexico, but he's actually the Mexican ambassador to the United States. But for somebody who has been as sympathetic in working with AMLO as Ambassador Salazar, to say very respectfully that in his opinion and his own experience as a lawyer, these new legal reforms could put at risk the willingness of companies to invest in Mexico, et cetera, et cetera. Well, AMLO took great offense at that, and apparently what the Canadian ambassador said as well. And so he is, so to speak, AMLO is put, so to speak, on pause the relationship with the embassy with Salazar. And so at the end of the day, it's really AMLO reacting in frustration that Ambassador Salazar would dare question what he is doing. But behind that, there is a profound issue that as we move into the Claudia Sheinbaum sexenio, that you will have the possibility of a court that's no longer independent and unprecedented executive authority, whether it's in changing contracts or with public works projects or other things. And given how bound U.S. companies and other Western companies are in Mexico and how we are tied together with supply chains through USMCA, as well as the importance of security cooperation with the literally hundreds of thousands, really millions of migrants to go through Mexican territory, having to worry about the independence of judicial institutions and security really raises some profound concerns about our neighbor immediately to the south, to which we are geographically connected.
The new president, Claudia Sheinbaum, takes office on October 1st. She's a protege of AMLO. She's Morena Party, known as a technocrat, an intellectual. She speaks perfect English. She's well-educated in California. So is her family. All these things I'm mentioning because that would appear to be someone who is not sympathetic to a constitutional adjustment such as AMLO is proposing. It would appear that Claudia Sheinbaum would be very sensitive to the disapproval of the American and Canadian embassy. Do we know her opinion of these AMLO proposals?
Well, the irony is that by all means seeing the way she governed Mexico City when she was the mayor there, and just her personal style as a technocrat who solicits opinions about good governance. It would appear that she's likely to be a more effective governor on technocratic issues, such as, for example, Mexico's incorporation of clean energy and bureaucratic management and the attraction of investors to the northern Mexican states like Nuevo León for what they call nearshoring. Ironically, however, she is not the communicator that AMLO is. She does not have that kind of political capital. And indeed, the sense is that AMLO will continue to be a bit of the godfather behind the scenes. Indeed, she has been remarkably silent on a number of these issues, other than indicating that she herself supports judicial reform. At the same time, there has been indications that she is certainly going to continue to move things in a troubling way. There was an indication that she was going to invite her people associated with her were going to invite Vladimir Putin to her inauguration, until they realized that under the International Court of Justice statutes that if they did that, they'd be obliged to arrest Putin because Mexico is a signatory to the ICJ, or for the fact that they said that they were going to invite Nicolas Maduro, effectively recognizing the stolen election and turning their head the other way. And so what is worrisome is that although by all means it looks like Sheinbaum is an effective administrator and technocrat and will probably do some positive things for public administration in Mexico, she may not be the politician that AMLO is, and there's some worrisome indications of where in matters of foreign policy, she'll take things. And frankly, at the end of the day, in the politics within Moreno, who really is going to be governing those sensitive internal party matters?
PRI, 70 years, I believe, is the number that PRI ruled. That was disrupted by reformers in the early 21st century, I believe. Is that a bad thing? Was PRI ineffective? If Marina's idea is to become PRI, is that not something that the Mexicans would be comfortable with?
Well, sadly, John, all dictatorships are usually started out as things that the population hope will be a good thing, but then discover when it's too late that it's a bad thing. But by that point, they can't do much about it. And so, certainly within the weak institutions, of course, coming out of that very tumultuous period of the Mexican Revolution, the PRI did have the legacy of consolidating power, bringing around a sense of order after, again, a decade of bloodshed. But then over the years, PRI came by using that same corruption that we talked about before to dominate the Mexican governorships, to buy loyalties and dominate institutions, to dominate the Congress, really to rig the rules in their favor. And that was why PRI was able to, despite Mexico being formally a democracy, maintain itself in power for 71 years until a party with progressive folks from the increasingly prosperous north of Mexico, the PAN, the National Action Party, were able to come to power. Vicente Fox, who was very close to George Bush's father, for example. And then so you had a time with the PAN in power. You had a time when the PRI came back to power, but without consolidating. And at the end of the day, in many ways, the Morena movement, which came out of the third party, the leftist party, the PRD, but the Morena movement that came to eclipse all of those three previous parties has basically done the same thing that the PRI did, but far more effectively than the PRI ever did, which is capture, now that I believe 3/4 of governorships in the Mexican states, which gives you enormous patronage power, and now 2/3 of the power in both houses of Congress, which allows you to basically change the Constitution as you see fit. And so, again, that political machine, which was what the PRI was all about, the new political machine, which is the old political machine, is now Morena. And so we now essentially are seeing the same tendencies which allowed the PRI to dominate for 71 years now kind of give birth to a new machine, which ironically, if you look at just the numbers, with the 2/3 majority in both houses of Congress, in many ways, Morena now has more institutional leverage than the PRI ever did. And so I think that's what thinking about, contractual security and executive power has a lot of people, including stock markets who are looking at Mexico, very, very worried. And at the same time, this is a new era for Mexico, an era within global interdependence and the tie to the U.S. economy that, this is not an isolated Mexico. This is a Mexico whose decisions profoundly affect supply chains for all of North America and matters of regional security when you have issues of drug flows and migration flows and a whole lot of other things. And at a time when also a predatory People's Republic of China are looking to work with Mexico and increasingly new ways to come into the region.
Professor Evan Ellis, U.S. Army War College. There's drought, there are fires, climate, always an issue in the Americas. We're going there. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.